Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with nutrition and mindset coach Amanda Beckwith. Amanda and I spoke about cognitive and behavioral approaches towards weight loss and how to improve your attitude towards change. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now, on to my conversation with Amanda. Amanda Beckwith, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, my absolute pleasure. I really am looking forward to talking about all things mindset, weight loss, etc. So, to get us started, what is the number one thing you are looking forward to for the listener to learn today?
I think one of the things that I try to emphasize when I work with my clients is you are not the only one going through this process and having a hard time with this process. This is not an easy feat. And I think living in today's world with social media, where you see she lost 40 pounds in 2 weeks, and this is what she looks like, and this is what she looks, that's not real. And one of the benefits I have as a therapist is I had my own weight loss journey. So I speak from personal experience, but I also speak from the knowledge around thoughts, feelings, beliefs, behaviors, all of those things. And I think that I just want to share with people that you are not alone in this journey. It's supposed to be challenging, and there are ways to make it a little bit easier.
I love that. And those are some amazing messages. I hope people have already opened their ears even more and are like, okay, I'm excited to hear what Amanda has to say. And you alluded to the fact that you have gone through your own weight loss journey, and I believe it's been a very impressive one. So please tell us about your own struggles or how you even got to the point of not feeling comfortable in your body, and then how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So going all the way back to childhood, I was always a healthy kid. I was in reasonable shape. I played softball in high school and college, but I never had a appreciation for healthy foods. I was a, pasta with butter, chicken nugget kind of girl. And no matter what my parents tried, I just would refuse to eat it. And that kind of followed me. And in my Around my senior year of college, I really started to enjoy the freedom that I now had and being able to make food choices for myself, which ultimately wound up in a lot of really bad food choices, low activity, a lot of alcohol. I really, pizza and beer and nachos and all of those things. And I actually gained 100 pounds in about a year. And it was all of a sudden too. It wasn't like I had just started eating unhealthy. I had been doing this for years, but for whatever reason, around 21, my body was like, nope, we're not doing this anymore. And so I found myself, going from like a size 8 to a size 24. And it was enormously challenging for me. There was a lot of, I felt my identity was very confused at that time. I had gained all this weight. I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to be with my friends, but I also didn't want to give up eating the foods because the foods were providing me with a coping mechanism. And that coping mechanism was for all the feelings that I didn't want to feel. So it worked really well as a negative coping mechanism. But what it also did was it prevented me from having hope that I could get out from underneath it. And when I was about 24, my health was not great. I decided my lab work was absolutely horrific for a 24-year-old girl. And I decided I was going to lose just a little bit of weight. I was 250 pounds at my heaviest. For reference, I'm 5'8". I'm currently 160 pounds. And I started with, those prepackaged meals, but this was 10 years ago. So they were not like your factor meals that are macro friendly. It was like freeze-dried food that came in a box. And basically, I taught myself how to starve myself because I thought that's what you were supposed to do. I thought you were supposed to eat as little as possible and move your body as much as possible. And for a long time, it worked. I took off the first 50 pounds in the first year. And then it took me another year to get the second 50 off. And from that time, I went from, a few months I did those freeze-dried meals. And then I started tracking macros. I had a friend who was a CrossFit coach, and he was like, you have to like eat things in a certain order, in a certain way. But I didn't really understand fully what it meant, and I didn't have a coach. So what wound up happening was I just kept decreasing my calories. And I had the belief that a lot of my clients have, which is that carbs are bad for you. So it was basically lean protein and like broccoli. No healthy fats, because I didn't understand the concept of a healthy fat. It worked. I lost 100 pounds. It took me 2 years. But I wasn't satisfied, because what they don't tell you when you lose a huge amount of weight is you don't get the abs, you don't get the muscle definition, you don't get that look that you're used to seeing. You just kind of get a deflated version of what you were before. So, you put in all this work and you're not happy. That just doesn't make sense. So my brain, type A personality, said, push harder. So I ate less. I started doing more and more cardio. For 3 years, I maintained that 100-pound weight loss, and I was averaging about 900 calories a day. And yeah, it was really bad. And it was pretty much mostly in protein bars. I'm not even gonna lie. This was not the best way to do this. And I was doing about 4 to 6 hours of cardio a day. Yeah, I was, we live in a world where the expectation is if you push harder, if you force it, it will come. It doesn't really work that way. The end of that 3 year span, I was not in good shape. I was 28. I had lost my period. My hair started to fall out. I had no energy. I had to nap multiple times a day. And then I found a coach. And those coaches, Calvin and Brooke, changed my life, because they were like, okay, you're not doing any cardio anymore. And I was like, what do you mean? I'm going to get fat. I can't get fat. No cardio. And Calvin was like, we're going to bring your calories up to about 2,100 calories over the next year. And I was like, no, I'm good. I don't really want to do this. But what wound up happening was my body started to heal itself from all the damage that I had done to it. And then in this process, I realized as a therapist that this process doesn't make a lot of sense with the information that we've been provided. So, over the next 3 years with Calvin and Brooke, eventually, we decided to combine forces, because we realized that what they do and what I do, they go hand in hand. And you really can't make such a sustainable change and a lasting change unless you address what's going on in your head. Because you can write a wonderful exercise plan, nutrition plan, but if the client doesn't choose to follow it, it's a piece of paper. So that's kind of how I wound up in this spot, and I absolutely love it. And I think that it is a missing piece for a lot of people. It's something I wish that I had a lot sooner.
100%. And firstly, thank you so much for sharing all that about your own story. I am sure that it resonates with a lot of people. I have never gotten to the point of, 900 calories or so per day, but certainly restriction of like specific foods, demonizing specific foods, being terrified of even like having an apple because it's a carb, basically living off of protein and fiber and then binging other times and so on. So I can relate to a small extent, but I mean, what I really like about your reflection is just that recognition of it was a coping mechanism, a very it fun it worked in that at that time, but it obviously never addressed the underlying issues. And I think we all have, whether that pertains to nutrition or whatever, we have coping mechanisms for traumas or holes or inadequacies that we feel in our life where we're like trying to numb or trying to just not deal with the things in the way that like I mean, the best way to deal with things is to go through them, but that like, through the issue, but that's the hard that feels the hardest in the moment, even though it would be the quickest way.
Right.
So, and quite often we have like blind spots ourselves because we're like we don't know why we grab the ice cream out of the freezer straight away. Like maybe it's just because you've always done it and you think that's the only reason, and you're not aware of the fact that it actually stems from somewhere deeper. So I really have so much appreciation for all the work that you're doing. And I think combining those two basically ex areas of expertise is absolutely amazing in order to create sustainable weight loss and shed more light onto that, because you're absolutely right. Like the best plan, the best macros, they don't serve anything. And I mean, I'm super impressed that you trusted in Brooke and Calvin straight away, because sometimes it is hard to gain a client's trust right away. Like if you tell them, hey, we're going to increase your calories, as you mentioned, like your first initial instinct was like, heck no, I'm not doing that. I don't need that, because your underlying thought was probably, I'm gonna get fat again. I don't want that. I've worked so hard for this. But there must have been something in you that just told you, hey, what you've been doing so far hasn't worked. You gotta, do a little bit. And I'm sure from their side as well, they probably said to you, hey, we're not gonna increase that from 900 to 2,100 tomorrow. Like, try eating 50 calories more tomorrow. That's all we're asking. Or like, yeah, tell me a little bit about the strategies that helped you trust them right away.
So like I said, when I first got off that consultation call with Calvin, I literally put the phone down and was like, I'm not doing this. There's no way I'm doing this. But something that I talk about a lot with my clients is change only happens when the discomfort of your current situation is worse than the discomfort of doing what you're afraid of. And that's where I was in my life at that point. I was In addition to the fact that, and I'll be candid, in addition to the fact that I was having physical symptoms, I was enormously depressed. And I do struggle with depression. And that period of my life was a very hard one for a number of reasons. But I also think it was so hard because I was so malnourished. And we could talk for days about the importance of food on your mood, but just from a physiological space, right? But knowing that this was something that they were offering me and they were willing to work with me and my fears. So in the beginning, Calvin and I, our check-ins were so long in the beginning, because Calvin would be like, you're doing awesome. This is great. I'm going to bump you a little bit more. And I'd be like, but I'm really scared and I'm nervous that I'm going to gain weight back. And in the process, I had the knowledge of what I do as a psychotherapist. So I'm like, okay, why am I so afraid that I'm going to gain this weight back? It's not that I don't want to look fat. That's a surface level fear. What is the fear underneath? For me, it was a sense of powerlessness. And I didn't want to feel that way again. So then by identifying that within myself and saying, these people are willing to help me, it's a better option than I've been given anywhere else. I don't like where my current space is. I should try this. Now, Calvin and Brooke's plan worked exceptionally well with me, because as they fed me up, my body responded super fast. And that's a blessing, because you want that positive reinforcement, right? He's asking for my trust. He needs to give me something back. But that in some ways is not totally up to him. It's up to how my body responds, right? Fortunately, it responded really well. And every time it responded well, I had more what I call evidence. Evidence that this is scary, but it works in a positive way. So I have to trust the process if I want to move forward. And Calvin and Brooke were super supportive of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're absolutely right. Unfortunately, as coaches, we don't have complete, or we have a no control over how how our client's body responds. But the beautiful thing really about our bodies is if we give them enough time and we continue to reassure them that we are now taking care of them, we are now there to like nourish them, to really like love our bodies, eventually they will respond very well. It's just sad if we're still stuck in that short-term mindset, thinking like, I'm sure there were days where the scale went up like a pound or two or what, maybe even more, especially if it was around your period. And you could have just as easily, or your subconscious could have just as easily said, oh, look, that's from the extra 50 calories you ate yesterday. You better over restrict today or jump on that cardio machine again because that worked in the past. You know, like sometimes that ugly head or ugly voice rears its head, and so it's easy to fall back. And I'm really, really glad that your body responded in such a good way. And I don't know if that's a topic that you talk to your clients about often, but in general, maybe you have some strategies for like how to get better in approaching change in general, like any kind of change or challenge or whatever, because we like that's the only constant in life that exists. Change will always come about. We want to hold on to how things are. That's just how humans are wired. But change is the only constant in life. So how can we get better at embracing change and challenges?
That's actually something I probably spend the most amount of my time working with clients on, because you find people saying, well, I want this, but I don't want to give up this. And sometimes that's possible, but most of the time it's not. There has to be some sort of give and take. And I think that as far as change goes, change won't happen unless there's willingness to change. So you don't. It doesn't necessarily matter if you want to lose the weight, but are you willing to make the changes required for that to happen? And so, one of the things I do is I use relevant life examples to make big concepts seem easier to understand. So, my first one that I usually use is school or college, right? So, you want a diploma, you have to complete the coursework. There's no wiggle room there, right? But you don't want to do the coursework. Maybe it's hard. Maybe you don't understand it. You're going to need to sit in that discomfort, which ironically, I literally have on my wall above me because I'm terrible at it. So I am with you. I have to do all the work that I tell my clients I do myself. But probably the number one determining factor for success. Because discomfort is everywhere. We all have very few things that make us comfortable. And then the scope of what makes us uncomfortable is much larger. So that willingness to change, and then understanding that you're going to be required to do new things that, A, you've never done before, and that we aren't already going to be good at. So people have a tendency to avoid activities that they don't know how to do because they don't get the positive reinforcement of being good at it. But you only become good at something if you practice. So that's one of the things with my clients where they're like, well, I hate tracking macros. Okay, how many times have you done it? For a week. I did it for a week. Okay, I've been tracking macros for 8 years. I track macros now in my head. I don't really need the same guidance I used to have. Why? Because I have 8 years of practice. And is there a quick fix for that? Not if you want a sustainable change. So that's the other thing, is change can occur and not be sustainable, which is your, and I did the Weight Watchers, the Jenny Craig, I did every diet on the planet. I always wound up gaining the weight back because I didn't learn the skills. I was just using the tools. And so what we try to do is I don't want you to want to need me forever. Calvin and Brooke is the same way. We don't want you to need us forever. We want to give you the tools so you can be successful and do this on your own. And then the last piece for change is change means leaving things behind. And especially with large weight loss, there's an identity issue there. I will be totally honest with you. I am in great shape. I'm incredibly strong. I lift 5 days a week. I love what I do. But there are days that I look in the mirror and the 250-pound version of me is what's looking back at me. That's not real. But that identity discrepancy can sometimes be really challenging. What am I leaving behind? Did I have good experiences in that time as well that I'm losing? So, just understanding that change is going to cost, but in the end, you're going to get back more in return.
Well, yeah, I think those points are also important and really, I'm sure so valuable to have those conversations with your clients, ideally to begin with, or in the okay, so that they even have an expectation of like, hey, that is going to come up. I need to leave parts of me behind. And even though in that moment they probably think, yes, I want change, but when it comes to actually executing, it's a different story. When you have your normal weekend binge friends ringing up you up and be like, hey, we ordered, five pizzas for the two of us or three of us. Are you on board? We're about to pick you up, and having the bravery of saying like, hey, no, actually, I've decided to make some changes here. That's a different story. And as you said, there's of course also some positive life moments, I'm sure, associated with that. And so having in order to make that a permanent or sustainable change, really addressing those underlying identity issues. And sometimes they, or I would say almost more so, they come up through interactions with other people. If someone is like, their nickname is already like Gordo, or like, hey, Biggie, or whatever, something like that. Or if they're like, oh, hey, you used to pack away three plates of that. What happened to you? Like, what's going on there? And like comments like that, it's so easy to just be like, oh yeah, sure, I'll have another one because I want to fit in. Particularly if maybe the rest of your friends or family is a bit larger. We all want to fit in. It is programmed into us, like that feeling of belonging. If you're suddenly the first person in your circle of friends who is starting a health journey, that is so hard. Like, I have so much respect for anyone who has the desire and is the first in their circle to actually take action on that. So I really think that's a very important thing to address in terms of identity. And I'm sure that in your own journey, but also with your clients, you probably, even if we are committed to making all these changes, but you have moments coming up, let's just say after a really hard day of work or breakup with a partner or whatever, where you want to emotionally eat, even though you might have thought through the scenario many times and have developed some new coping mechanisms as well. But yeah, nonetheless, when that desire, that instinct, that drive comes up to like, hey, just, self-soothe with whatever on the couch, what's something you tell your clients or even use yourself in order to kind of work through that?
That is something I talk about a lot with my clients because it's something everybody goes through because we are not perfect. You can put 100% of your energy in, but there's still variables, right? Things that are gonna just happen. And when that happens, we have a tendency to do a couple of things. So when it comes to, I'll use myself for example. When I'm on my period right before I get it, I always have a night, one night where, and that's how I know it's coming, where I just want to eat everything in my house. And it's frustrating because it's like, you know better. Why would you do this? But in that circumstance, I have to, so this is something that I give to all my clients is I tell people instead of thinking about having a right brain and a left brain, you want to think about having a rational brain and an emotional brain. So your emotional brain, mine in this case, says something's going on in your body right now, so you should eat everything in your kitchen. And then my rational brain says the hormone change right now is triggering you. We have to make sure that we do everything in our power to reduce the harm of the impact. So I didn't say not eat because then you're setting yourself up. You gave yourself one out, and if you don't take it, you failed. And then when you're being hard on yourself, the self-soothing from the food will come in. So it's all working together.
And the self-loathing as well, where we're like talking badly to ourselves, like, oh, what, you're a piece of whatever, because you failed, you didn't succeed, you didn't stick with what you set yourself out to do.
Exactly. And all of those emotions. So I come from, my training is in cognitive behavioral therapy. So cognitive refers to your thoughts, your feelings, your fears, your beliefs. And then behavioral is behavioral and it refers to your behaviors. But they're all connected. So we don't we don't have behaviors that don't come with either a thought, a feeling, a fear, or a belief first. So, in that moment where I'm about to eat everything in my kitchen, what do I do? Well, there's a couple things. The first is I know myself and I know that this is likely to happen. So, what I call this is putting up roadblocks. My house, for example, I don't have children, so it's easier to do. But there's nothing in my house that I can really get in trouble with. Everything in here is relatively healthy. Now, when I'm on my cycle, I will go for the jar of almonds. Not exactly a cheeseburger, but it's available to me. Did I reduce the harm of the impact by going for almonds versus ordering a cheeseburger? Yeah, probably by a lot. So the behavior still existed, but you did something called harm reduction and you set yourself up in a way so that you don't have things in your house that are going to be hard for you. Now, this is more complicated if you have other people living in your house because you can't really tell everybody what they can and cannot eat. But I think the most important thing, if you're on a weight loss journey, and specifically a weight loss journey, and you have an overnight eating episode, or you go out and you wind up binging a little bit on some pizza or something, it is very important that you get on the scale the next morning. The reason for that is you had a negative behavior. You have to greet that with a consequence. Without the consequence, you don't know how much damage you did. So your brain is going to rationalize, it was fine. It probably didn't even do too much. That can be a really hard space for people because even myself, when I first started, in the beginning, I had, fewer rules around how I ate. And I was finding myself eating terrible on the weekends and in that cycle. But I wouldn't weigh myself because I didn't want to see it. But if you don't want to see it, there's a reason there that you have to see it. Otherwise, you're not going to stop. You're not going to change. That's that discomfort.
Absolutely. And going back to the point of like the best way through it, or the best way to overcome it is to go through it, like to confront the fear, exactly to your point. I actually like that because there is, I mean, even amongst coaches, sort of like the debate of like, oh yeah, you don't want to trigger that extra fear and guilt trip by stepping on the scale and seeing that. But I really like the point of like, hey, stepping on it, and it makes you own up to what you did, right? It's not, again, we're not saying like you're a lesser person because of that. I think we really always have to differentiate between like what we think and say to ourselves, as in like who we think we are and our actions. They're two different things. Like you're just as valuable and lovable of a person, no matter like if you're 500 pounds, if you're 115 pounds, doesn't matter. We love you equally, but your actions still, as you mentioned, need to have some consequences. Just like with a child, if a child binges in the cupboard and eats three things of like three blocks of chocolate, you're also going to confront them and be like, "Hey, that's not okay."
That is the work I do around behavioral modification is primarily the evidence for that is mostly around children, because you're trying to teach them something. And the example I give people is cheat meals. So I'm going to say there's a difference before I say anything. I'm going to say there's a difference between a cheat meal and a free meal.
Yeah, 100% with
So
you.
very important. But the concept of a cheat meal. I did great on my diet all week long, so I'm going to go eat a pizza and get beer and wings with my friends on the weekend. I deserve it. We have a couple really bad things going on there, right? One is that you're using food to determine reward, which is a really big problem. And what happens there is when we want to extinguish a behavior, when we want someone to stop doing something, we can't give them a pony for it. It doesn't work that way. So the example I give my clients, and they're always like, oh, is if you're potty training your kid. So you're potty training your kid, and well, I mean, it's a separate thing that we usually use food to do that, but it's whatever. But Could you imagine if your kid had a whole day where they didn't have an accident in their diaper, so you rewarded them by allowing them to poop in their diaper?
No.
Makes no sense.
That's
That's a cheat meal.
a brilliant metaphor or analogy.
Yeah, people really like that one because they're like, okay, I can't really argue with that. But the reason I said it's different between, a cheat meal and a free meal, well, now we're talking about the difference between an unlimited meal and a meal with guidelines. Those guidelines might be outside the scope of the normal guidelines. They may be a little bit looser, but there's still guidelines there. We never want anything to be unlimited because when something is unlimited, we don't value it. And that's a big thing.
I would love to like hi visually auditively highlight that. That is that's a wonderful line. Like, if there is something that I'm all for, it is moderation. I truly think extremes are the issue of today's society, worldwide, where we're like, oh, I encourage to exactly to your point, like overeat everything over Christmas and then over restricted here,
Right.
whatever, like moderation. And what a wonderful point to like just acknowledge. If it's completely free or unlimited, we don't value it. That's
Right.
amazing. Well said.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, and again, that analogy really, I can understand why that hits home with a lot of people. So yeah, I mean, the distinction in general between free meals and cheap meals, I think for the listeners, important to hear. Coaches obviously have various strategies. Sometimes you might just say like, hey, tonight I want you to go out to a restaurant, order something, somewhat decent. It might be like steak and baked potato and some veggies, and you can enjoy a shared dessert with your partner. Enjoy that. Don't stress about it. We want to take the pressure off. But with a cheat meal, it's just like go bonkers. You're literally, as you mentioned, like free for all, basically. Forget that day ever happened. And normally the consequence of that is that we do wake up also in physical pain because we're super bloated, we're retaining a ton of water, digestive issues, and so on. And subconsciously there is a guilt component as well. So yeah, the free meal, or in my eyes, also something like a refeed day where you're getting, certain calorie values, but they're usually higher than normal. Those are some good strategies to just give people a little bit of more wiggle room and making sure that we're continuing with a good relationship with food and not becoming too numbers focused. Or yeah, like I'm sure you also have clients that fall into that other extreme back then as well, in the sense of I need to hit 1781 calories today and exactly 142 grams of protein, otherwise I'm a failure. We don't ever want anyone to get there or be there.
Right. That is actually something I do handle a fair amount, more than you'd think. I've had a handful of eating disorder clients where that's the type of work that we do. And what I do with that is I take, again, my approaches come from, I have a master's in clinical social work. So my approaches come from psychology. So what I would do with someone like that is something called ERP, exposure and response prevention. And I modify it because obviously I'm not like in a therapy setting. But basically, it's gradually exposing the client to the thing that's causing them anxiety until they do it enough times that the anxiety comes down. And then you raise the bar a little. So I had an over-exerciser, and she would go for like 60-mile bike rides, runs, like crazy amount of endurance, but didn't have the food on board to support that in the moment. So it was taxing on her body. So at first, I can go one or two ways, and I have to kind of gauge the client, but I can either remove it completely, like Calvin did with me, where he was like, no more cardio, but he gave me a replacement behavior. He said, you can't do cardio, but here's lifting. And it worked very well. What I did with her is I gradually, incrementally decreased the length and distance of her runs. And by the time she got to probably about the halfway mark, so let's say 30 miles out of 60 miles, I got, maybe I could take a day off. And I'm like, oh, weird. Sure, let's do
Yeah.
that. So it's, we have to, sometimes it's about dismantling negative behaviors, and then sometimes it's dismantling theoretically positive behaviors, but that can be overused. So, people who eat really, really healthy, clean foods, but they're under eating, we're telling people to eat those same foods just in different amounts. So you can have too much of a good thing, just like you can have too much of a bad thing. But really, what we're looking for is what you mentioned, which is that balance, which is, I normally run on Tuesdays, but my friend invited me to lunch, so I'm gonna go to lunch and run on Thursday. But that's really hard, especially for type A thinkers. That is a really hard thing for them to wrap their heads around.
Yeah, I totally put myself into that category too, like having a harder time letting go of that. But I think it goes back to the point of trust that we mentioned earlier, where we're like, because you start trusting your body and start trusting the data, which often goes contrary to beliefs, like in a reverse diet, in your case, like the physiologically speaking, the whole narrative of like eating less, doing more should work, is logical. Yes, it makes sense until it doesn't anymore. And then the whole logic of like eating more and losing weight, or eating more and at least maintaining weight, doesn't make so much sense. But then once you execute little by little by little by little, you're like, oh, there's actually truth to that. And I'm sure that client that you mentioned, she probably noticed, okay, even though I'm running half as much, I'm still not fat. I'm f probably actually feeling better, not as achy everywhere. Oh, I guess there is something to the things that Amanda is saying. Maybe I'm gonna test that extra rest day or so. But yeah, we're often really just standing in our own ways with the routines, with the rules that we have created for ourselves. And again, I'm putting my hand up here because that is more and more naturally inclination speaking, is me as well. But yeah, I really like that strategy here of just testing and seeing what type of person we're working with, because I think that is the true art of coaching, where you're not, I'm sure you don't have your initial call with somebody and you're like, okay, I'm gonna give her plan number 17, because like it really like you assess the person. Okay, is this someone who I need to reduce the exercise with or replace it with? Is this someone where we need to talk about the nighttime eating straight away? Or we're even going into, whatever childhood issues someone might have. And I'm curious, is that something that people are very open to sharing straight away, or do they tend to be more guarded? And over the course of the time, you kind of discover, oh, it probably stems from her watching her mom starve herself every year, or like all the time, or like how does that usually come about?
That's really one of those things that I kind of pride myself on, is knowing how to get information when it's appropriate for that information. I will say, a good amount of the time, people will give me a couple nuggets right off the bat. And from that, I know where to go. I do get people occasionally who are more closed off. And with that, I have to work harder to develop my rapport so that they trust me enough with that sensitive level of information. But what that also tells me is they're guarded for a reason. So, if you don't think someone's going to steal from you, your door is unlocked. But if you're afraid, well, your door is going to be double bolted. So, and then I also have gotten, which these are my favorites because they're very challenging, is people who don't believe therapist mumbo jumbo about the childhood. I do get that a fair amount. And I think everybody is completely entitled to believe exactly as they want. But what usually winds up happening with those clients is I don't acknowledge the childhood piece, but I gear my questions towards them offering it. And they will offer it to me eventually. I will say, I am a firm believer. I'm a Freudian. I think everything comes from the childhood. Because, childhood is when we learn behaviors. That's how we learn how to function. So the things that we're provided with or not provided with are going to affect who we are and who we become. I work with a number of patients, clients. I used to work in a hospital, so sometimes they say patients. I work with a number of clients who have dealt with things in their childhood like food scarcity, and most of them are binge eaters now. And that is something that I really am delicate with, because when we're talking about food, now we're not just talking about food, we're talking about the emotions around the food. So, was your mother there? Was she not there? Where did the food come from? Did you get food from, did you have to go take food from somewhere? Were you hoarding your food? Those things are really important when it comes to understanding why this client can't stop binging every week. And that's where what I do becomes really important with what Calvin and Brooke do is, they have the plans and the knowledge on the nutrition and all of that, but I'm then able to say, okay, this is not a client we're going to give a free meal to because X, Y, and Z. So just being aware of the things that particularly come from childhood, especially things around body image, self-image. I think every female I've ever worked with has had, teenage body image issues. Very common thing that I talk about. So yeah, I think that it can be challenging sometimes to get the initial information out. But fortunately, that's what I am trained to do. So I am able to, pull things and then use that information to educate the team and the plan that we have for that person.
That's awesome. And I mean, as you said, everything in the right time. Like, I don't think it's appropriate in the first call, unless the person is ready for that, but most of the time not, like to ask like, oh, so by the way, what sort of patterns did you
Yeah.
observe in your mom when you were 8 years old or whatever? And to your point of like believing in therapy or not, or however you want to phrase that, I mean, we all bring our baggage. We all are sort of I guess marked by society's influences, by marketing influences, and so on. So whether we acknowledge that there is an underlying component or not, our habits have not been created out of thin air. So however you go about that and treating that or changing that is absolutely up to the individual themselves. But I think the beautiful thing about coaching is that no one claims to have all the answers or to be like, oh, I'm gonna, shrink your head or whatever it is. I believe, at least in my opinion, coaching is about the client. The person already has all the answers within them. We're simply guiding them or providing the opportunity to tilt the mirror in a way that they can see what they already know. It's just you often need someone to help you reveal that. And that's all that we're doing, like in coaching anyway. I mean, you are obviously a trained and studied therapist, so that's a level further. But nonetheless, I think combined with the art of coaching, you have a lot of power there. So honestly, just want to say thank you for coming on here and sharing your
Thank
wisdom
you.
with us. It's honestly been a pleasure speaking with you. I know that you've provided some really valuable information for the listeners here. And of course, I will make sure to link all your handles in the show notes. So hopefully people will go and follow you to get more information from you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Amanda. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.